The Athletic.
E que golaço!
Qatar Lytic Converter. Richarlison's brilliant brace lights up day five for Brazil as the Seleção see off the Serbs. Elsewhere, recently fired man successfully sues as Portugal beat Ghana. Switzerland downed Cameroon and Uruguay-South Korea heavy on the Kim, less on the Wild. And that's the opening round completed. We check out the day's action and look ahead to Friday. Minas Gerais 1950, Foxborough 93, Rustenburg 2010. Are we set for another special USA-England? It's Totally at the World Cup, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. Listener, thanks for joining us. We're at the back end of day five of this World Cup. It was sweaty, it was steamy. It featured some pretty exciting results. We're going to talk about it with our friends Adrian Clark and Carl Anker here in the studio. And also joining us very shortly, Natalie Gedra from, Brazil, but currently in Qatar. And also a bit later on, we'll be hearing from Sam Stayskull on Friday's big game. All right. Hey, Carl, it's the end of the first round. Everybody's played. What's your big takeaway?
Brazil seem to be the team to beat in this tournament. I really think...
More than Spain?
I will apply a soft asterisk or footnote on how poor Costa Rica were. But in terms of the quality Brazil displayed and the quality of the opposition in Serbia, I think that was the most impressive performance. And also the amount of options Brazil can bring off the bench. If Neymar isn't injured, as we're recording this, he seemed to put his head in his hands and have some ice on his ankle. If that isn't as bad as we think it is, then I think that they remain the favourites for the competition.
What do you think, Adrian? Is this recency bias?
It could be, but they were impressive. It was comprehensive, wasn't it, I think, from Brazil. Didn't give quite a dangerous Serbia side a sniff, really, in the game. I wouldn't put it down as the performance of the round now. I think that England and Spain should share that status, really? Personally. Yeah, I just thought the fluency of the performances were outstanding. Great movement. And the thing that really pleased me was the three midfielders, the three youngsters, Bellingham for England,
right,
and Pedri and Gavi for Spain. Just so much quality, so much composure. And they're 19, 18, 19. They add up, their combined ages add up to 56. The same age as David Platt, who we all remember from Italian 90, or certain people of a certain age will remember. It just blows my mind. I played with David Platt.
Right.
He's not that much older than me.
Wow.
And these three stars of the World Cup,
yep,
can combine. It's frightening how good they are.
Adrian, I asked you for a conclusion on the opening round of matches, and I got that. But I got more, so much more. Incredible stream of consciousness. We'll be looking to ride that train with you throughout today's show. Quick check on the results. Here's what happened on Thursday in Group G. It was Switzerland 1, Cameroon 0. That's Cameroon's eighth straight defeat at World Cups. Only Mexico have ever lost more. They did 9. Cameroon could thus break their record in their final group game this year, which is against Brazil. Brazil, who beat Serbia 2-0 on Thursday evening. Group H, meanwhile, it was Uruguay 0, South Korea 0. Much more to come on that game. And Portugal 3, Ghana 2. To quote the analysts, first half boredom, second half bedlam. What an extraordinary match that was. One question here from Ryan Gray, and this does relate to the first round, because one of the standout features has been the number of nil-nils. A lot of theories about this, Adrian. Is it the fact that teams had so little preparation?
Personally, I think so. Yeah, I do, because when you've got a short space of time to prepare a team, almost every coach that I've ever worked with, I suspect most national team coaches, will focus on defence. They'll focus on, let's get the structure of the team right. Let's get the shape as we need it to be. The attacking bit tends to come with games. It tends to come with match practice. And that's where the instinctive brilliance comes from, the pictures that players have in their minds. It comes through match practice, and we've had none. Normally, 3 friendlies, I think, apiece before a major tournament. That's where you get the boring stuff out of the way, and you're supposed to, it's supposed to come together for the big one. So we've been denied that, and I think that's definitely played a part.
All right. Why is it that teams like Spain haven't had that issue then?
Playing pretty poor teams. Costa Rica weren't very good.
Okay. Iran, England with Iran, the same.
I think Iran were very distracted, don't you? I think, obviously, you know, kudos to them for the protest, but with the stance that they took comes a lot of mental strain and I would suggest off the pitch worries. So I don't think their minds were firmly focused on the match.
I would say England were very good in the precise manner that Iran are quite weak. So that Iran squad has a dearth of wingers. Their fullbacks aren't fantastic. And not only do England have some of the best wide forwards at this World Cup, they also have two of the best ball progressors at fullback as well. So, yes, not to quiet the very serious political situation going on in Iran, but I also think England were better than Iran because England are better than Iran in the precise manner that Iran are weak to. Another thing that's changed is, the 2018 group stage just had so many penalties. It was the first World Cup with VAR, a lot of rough and tussling on corner kicks and free kicks, and there were just that extra boost there. I'd also say there are a number of national teams at this World Cup that just desperately miss a goal scorer.
Right,
desperately could do with someone with a little bit more nous in the final third.
That's true. Although here's a shocking statistic. I went back and checked how many goals were scored in the opening round of matches in 2018, thinking it'd be way more than this year, but it's not. It's actually less. Although most of the ones this time around have come in three matches, essentially. At half-time today, if you like, before the second two games, it was exactly 17 goals for England, Spain and France and 17 goals for all the other 29 teams put together.
There it is.
Yeah. It wasn't 58 minutes a half, though, was it?
No, the
previous
that's
World
true.
Cup, so,
that's true.
Yeah, I think you really are going some to get goalless draws when you're playing 110-minute matches.
That is fair. Just one other thing. We mentioned the protest by the Iranian players and word on this Thursday. Very worrying news, actually. The Iranian security forces have arrested footballer Voria Ghafouri, capped 28 times for Iran, on the grounds of having tarnished the reputation of the national team because he'd vocally supported protests. Best wishes to him and everybody who's living through that situation. We'll get on to Thursday's games next.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet.
Final game of the opening round was Brazil 2, Serbia none whatsoever. Both goals for the Seleção scored by Richarlison. And joining us now from Qatar is Natalie Jedra of ESPN Brazil. Hi, Natalie.
Hello, James. Vai, Brazil.
Yeah, well, exactly. Wow, you're fresh from the game, and that's very exciting. On a scale of the other favourites between, say, Argentina at one end to Spain at the other, where would you put this Brazil performance?
Well, this Brazil performance was... I think Spain is still topping the favourites after what they did in their first match. But I think more important than the win itself, Brazil needed to play well this first match. And first matches of World Cup, they involve such nerves, and I think we saw a little bit of that in that first half. Because Serbia was always going to be tough. They were always going to defend deep, and they have they're very organized, their line of five defenders, and they're good on the air. But Brazil struggled on the first half, and second half, I think the team was able to show their potential, their personality, what everybody's expecting from Brazil, the way they played, and the way they imposed themselves, and the amount of chances they created. So for Brazil, for Brazilians in general, I think it's much more than the win. There is an obligation to play a certain way. And from the start, if you play a certain way from the start, from the first match in the World Cup, this is so important because it just brings the fans together. And you could see the satisfaction with the players, the way they celebrated, and they're all so together and they're all so aware of what they need to do and the movements they need to do because they worked on it since before Russia, even, because Chichi has been with the team since 2016. So it was very it was great. It was amazing. it was everything we wanted.
Both goals from Richarlison. There was a lot of chat in the UK, some of it in this room, about whether Richarlison should be Brazil's centre forward. Had there been similar views expressed in Brazil, and what did you make of his performance, his response tonight?
Honestly, James, I think if you asked me at the start of the season who was going to be the number nine, I was going to say Gabriel Jesus, because not only he was doing really well at Arsenal, but the coaching staff and Chichi, they all trust Gabriel really. They really mm-hmm. trust him, and he's very dedicated tactically. He's very useful in different moments of the match, but Richarlison has something. Richarlison has two things that Brazilians really appreciate. He has a true passion to be in the national team, and he doesn't hide it, and he makes it clear every time he can. The group loves him, and all the Brazilians really love Richarlison. He has this charisma and this spontaneous side in him that really wins the fans over. And I think all this passion that he has for the national team, it really shows every time he's on the pitch. So in a way, I was surprised that he picked Richarlison, because I think Gabriel is more experienced in the national team. But well, Chichi was right, absolutely, because he played brilliantly. Both goals were brilliant. Second goal was amazing, the volley. But the first goal, as a proper striker, the way he positioned himself among the defenders, and the way he read what Vini Jr. was doing. So that was really, really, really positive for Richarlison and for Brazil's attack. And speaking about Brazil's attack, James, what I like is that Neymar wasn't brilliant. And because in a way, there's still more to come. Brazil can, mm-hmm. if you have this Brazilian side playing in a night that Neymar's inspired, then you can show a lot more. You know, they haven't showed all their cards in the first game, but they have showed some really, really good ones.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think Vinicius Jr. was really effective, wasn't he? Getting in behind the opposition defenders. What I wanted to ask you, though, was about the substitutes, about the depth, because everybody looks at Brazil's bench and says, wow. A little bit like England. Maybe there's more of a wow factor, I have to say, about Chiche's squad. But Gareth Southgate's been credited with keeping a great spirit, with describing them as finishers, not subs, just keeping everybody happy to just be involved. How does it work with your national team? How are Jesus and Martinelli and Rodrigo, how are these people staying happy and on board?
Yes, I think there's one aspect that we really need to stress is how much the players like Chichi. They all pay very high compliments in him because his man management is brilliant. And it was like that in Corinthians, and it's been like that in the national team. During this entire period, he's been the head coach. So, and even when you're talking to the players off the record, they're always paying compliments to Chichi, because he manages the group really well, and the coaching staff really helps him with that. So if a player is not playing, he knows why he's not playing, and everything is very crystal clear there. There's nothing, and this makes the group even more together. So to manage players that playing such a high level in their clubs, and to keep them happy on the bench, and they're not causing any problems. So this is all down to Chichi, and of course the substitutions on the second half, attacking wise, were quite impressive because there's so much quality. But you also have these tactical variations in midfield that are so important to keep Brazil's balance as well. So he took off Paquetá, that is such an important player for Chichi, because he can play in three different roles, and he has been playing in three different roles, and he's ready to play all these roles. And he puts Fred, or he can use Fabinho, or he can use Bruno Guimarães, who's been brilliant this season. So the attacking players, of course, they're very impressive. But what really interests me about this Brazilian group is how much variety you can get in different parts of the pitch as well.
Is there any area of the squad that concerns you? Is there any potential weakness in this Brazil squad for my England supporting mind, just in case we meet later on in the tournament.
Yes, I think all Brazilians would say the fullbacks, because not because they're bad options, but it's just that the options on the other positions are just outstanding. And I think everybody kind of expects Brazil to produce Cafus and Roberto Carlos every year, but it doesn't work like that. But honestly, I think especially Alexandro. Alexandro played a great match, and I was very pleased to see how the fullbacks worked against Serbia. And Danilo, I think he really matured ever since he arrived in Italy and in Juventus. He's more solid than he was at Man City, for example. So they're not on the same ridiculous level as Cafu and Roberto Carlos, because I think that's very unfair. But I think the group and the way Brazil is defending, and Thiago Silva, again, he was so good, and Marquinhos, they know each other so well. So the whole defensive system kind of makes it all work really well. It makes sense, you know, with both fullbacks, yeah.
Brilliant. Well done for finding a flaw in the Seleção for us there, Natalie, even if it wasn't a particularly big one. Next up, you've got Switzerland. That'll be what, Monday, will it be?
Yes, it's Monday. But this win against Serbia is, this match was seen as the trickiest one in the group for everything that Serbia did on qualifying, topping Portugal's group. So it was a big one. I think Switzerland, Cameroon is seen as the weakest team in the group, but Switzerland can be tricky as well. So we'll see.
All right. Well, enjoy this win for now, and we'll catch up with you ahead of the Switzerland game. Natalie Jedra, thank you very much indeed.
Definitely. Thank you, guys.
Natalie Jedra in Qatar. The other game in that group on Thursday saw Switzerland beating Cameroon 1-0. The goal by Brillem Bolo. That's his third goal in three matches for Switzerland. Afterwards, a lot of comment about the fact that he did the I'm not celebrating celebration, because he was born in Cameroon but is playing for Switzerland. First time I think we've seen that in international football. Is that right?
To my memory, first time I've seen a muted celebration in a World Cup. Someone also pointed out that Mr. Mbolo's father lives in Cameroon, so I'm sure he will have a particularly spicy conversation tomorrow morning.
How did you feel about Cameroon's performance? Were they the most disappointing of the African sides to that point?
Yeah, for the first 20 minutes, it really looked as if Switzerland weren't very good. Cameroon just really didn't seize on a decent opportunity, and slowly Switzerland just started turning the screw. It wasn't a great attacking game here. So I'm just looking at the stats right now. Switzerland had 7 shots, 3 on target. But I will say there were 2 or 3 instances where Granit Xhaka found a lot of space in the final third, like he has been doing for Arsenal, and the final pass didn't come. So you would hope they would find a way to use that more in their game against Serbia, because I think that would be the one that decides who comes out of this group along with Brazil.
Okay. I thought they were okay for the first half. Cameroon? I thought it was an even game. I actually felt that they were handling Switzerland. They made Switzerland look very predictable, which they kind of are. They're very structured in the way that they knock the ball around. But they had a little bit of X factor, Cameroon, with those runs from midfield, breaking forward. I think Anguissa did it a couple of times. They got some joy down the right. And what happened was that they reacted terribly to going behind. And what they did is then they chased the game. They ended up making those kind of forward runs with no platform behind them. In the first half, they did it with all the players back. In the second half, they carried on making these forward runs, but the rest of the team was completely out of shape. And that's why I think Switzerland just sort of had a field day. They began finding spaces that just didn't exist in the first half. So I think tactically, that they got it wrong after conceding. And that's a mental thing, isn't it? They're disappointed. They've got to calm themselves down and think, hang on, let's stay in the game for 15, 20 minutes. But they didn't. They wanted to get that equaliser straight away, and the game ran away from them.
All right, well, Switzerland topping the group with Brazil then, ahead of Monday's second round of matches. Let's move on then next to what happened in Group H, which was pretty remarkable.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScore Bet, the home of Squads. Squads is a weekly free-to-play game You reveal five players across the week which make up your squad, and you can earn cash each time they score in the selected games. The cash amount is decided by LiveScore Bet's prize wheel and can range from 10p up to £50 per goal, which you can spend once the final player is revealed. Find out more and play squads for yourself for free at livescorebet.com or by downloading the LiveScore Bet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only and full terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
50 de Portugal em Mundiais. Ronaldo partiu. Lá vai ele. Marcou. Sim! Ronaldo está cá e está para fazer golos.
Wow. Cristiano Ronaldo. Taking the critics' words and shoving them right back down their throats with that penalty, which broke the deadlock in Portugal's game against Ghana. It made him the first male player ever to score at five different World Cups. Incredible, Carl. I say male player because
Marta and Christine Sinclair have scored in five World Cups.
Incredible. The other remarkable stat about this was that it meant that he is now both the youngest player to ever score for Portugal and the oldest. Wow.
It wasn't a penalty.
All right.
I'm sorry. Well, to make it very clear how I'm talking to you right now, I am wearing the Ghana home kit, and I stood up and I had my hand over my heart as Ghana did the national anthem, so I'm giving you a very partisan view of this game.
Well, I'm going to ask you to take that baggage away and give us a purely impartial view of how that game unfolded, because it was deadlocked at 0-0 for so long, and then the penalty shout set a pretty extraordinary final part of the game in motion. You didn't feel it was a penalty. Adrian, what was your view?
No, I didn't think it was a penalty either. But
to be fair to Portugal and Ronaldo, I think their fans would say that he had been denied a goal back in the first half because he hadn't really fouled the Ghanaian defender when he... No?
I'm sorry. Again, I'm wearing a Ghana shirt. I'm rolling my eyes.
Maybe we'll come to you on this, Adrian. So anyway, that made it 1-0, and Cristiano Ronaldo, he does a special celebration. I don't know if you've seen it. He leaps up in the air. Very nice. But it was only minutes later that Ghana were back level again.
It was. It was quite remarkable. Mohamed Kudus, best Ghanaian attacking player, finds a bit of space, gets a cross in, and Andre Ayew converts, 73rd minute. And what unfolds is essentially what Mr. Clark has just said Cameroon did. Once they equalise, so they Ghana go chasing the game. They make two substitutions in the 77th minute, so Kudus and Andre Ayew come off.
Yeah, what was the thinking?
I am baffled.
Because Osman, Kudus was easily the best player.
Easily Ghana's best attacking player, not just in this squad, but also the best attacking player I've seen in the Ghana shirt in 10 years since young Andre Ayew came out. Andre Ayew comes off along with Kudus for Bukari and Jordan Ayew, and in the 90 seconds where Andre Ayew is celebrating with his bench about scoring, he turns around and sees João Félix has scored.
Yeah, it was a classic moment of hubris, no? Yeah. Comparable to, I don't know, Steve McLaren on Sky Sports News all those years ago.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, and it was João Félix who put Portugal back in the lead.
And then 2 minutes later, Ralph Leão scores, who came on as a substitute, scores for Portugal because Ghana went chasing the game with no platform in behind the shape. This 5-3-2 shape they had played for much of the first half just completely dissolves, and you think this is it, 3-1, game over, pack it all in.
But then
another cross, a headed goal for Bukari.
Yeah.
And the Sioux celebration.
Yeah, he does the Sioux celebration.
Much to the chagrin of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Was this a wind-up? Or is this something that he does all the time?
He's never done that before.
Okay,
I wouldn't call it a wind-up. I would...
A homage, perhaps.
Yes, I'll call it a homage. I'll call it one of the Andros Townsend variety.
Okay.
Where he scored for Everton against Manchester United, and he did the Sioux and went, it's a tribute to a player I've idolised. So I'll chalk it up to one of those. And then
right at the end, this extraordinary scene. This would be, what, the 96th minute or something?
It's minute 98 of 99.
Okay. And Costa, the Portuguese goalkeeper, has got the ball and he's just seeing out the clock, and he puts the ball down, but he's got no idea that 2 meters behind him is
Inaki Williams, just completely hiding in his blind spot, runs ahead, nabs onto the ball, and then slips. So what would have been one of the... What I will say is the camera cuts to Cristiano Ronaldo, who's got his hands head, you know, he's got his hands above his head, screaming out, you know, incredulously, understanding. I still can't verbalize what happened because I'm just absolutely baffled at someone who came so close to scoring one of the greatest equalizers you'll see in World Cup group stage.
It's not slightly World cheated Cup. That it didn't
and
happen.
And it didn't happen. Yeah, yeah. It was blimey.
All right.
He slipped. Inches.
But where did all this come from? Because that was another dull game, wasn't it? It was not a classic at all. And it felt like, finally we got a goal. It's a penalty, but we'll take it. It's a goal. At least we got one today.
It was really strange because, I mean, over the last, since 2016, perhaps even longer, Santos's Portugal have been boring.
Solid.
Except for the other night when they played Nigeria and beat them 4-0. But I mean, yeah, pre-World Cup friendly, whatever.
Their entire, you know, the ethos is very much control the space, make sure the opposition can't really do anything. That first half, Ghana didn't have a touch of the ball in the Portugal penalty area. That's Santos suffer ball, right? We'll score, we'll keep the ball away from you, and we're going to keep you at arm's length because it's better to win 1-0 than 4-0, 4-1 or 4-2. That's what they do. And then it just complete loss of shape. I think Santos got his substitutes right. That front three of Bruno Fernandes, Cristiano Ronaldo and João Felix doesn't really work because all three of those men work better when they play off someone who's a more consistent penalty box presence. Raul Leao, have I said that correctly?
Rafael Leao.
Yep, Rafael Leao added a little bit of burst and some dribbling creativity, which really, really helped. And I think that the midfield three behind them needed some reworking because Ruben Neves, as the deepest lying midfielder, I don't really think that really works for Wolverhampton Wanderers, and I don't really think that will work for Portugal. I would expect or would kindly advise Mr. Santos, who's won a European Championship and won a Nations League and knows far more about football than I will ever learn, to play Paulinho instead.
Okay. Cristiano Ronaldo, Adrian, he enjoyed himself so much he even stayed until the final whistle, says The Athletic's Tim Spears. What did you make of his afternoon?
Oh, he had 4 shots, didn't he, in the game? He was involved. I don't think we're ever going to see the Cristiano Ronaldo of old, but a little bit like Gareth Bale. Mm. He's there for the moment, isn't he? And he was cool in
that
moment.
Is he, though?
Yeah, he might be. Carl. Do you know, wouldn't it be funny? Everyone came into this World Cup saying, oh, it's going to be Messi's last World Cup. Wouldn't it be funny if it turned out to be CR7's World Cup instead?
Hilarious.
I mean, it would.
Not.
Right. But, probably won't happen.
Hang on, though. But this is a guy. I know that he's not been good this season, but he did score 18 goals last season. Terrible.
That was last season in a team that had their worst ever finish in the Premier League, in Premier League history. And what I will say about Ronaldo's performance today, and again, please, I'm wearing a Ghana shirt. I have no interest in being bipartisan here. I'm just one-sided on this thing. Mm-hmm. You again saw the issues Ronaldo has had that you saw for Manchester United, in that he doesn't have that burst of pace to get away from players anymore. I think the goal that was ruled off for being a foul, he probably scores that without making it a foul a year ago, 2 years ago, because he has the extra yard of pace. He had an opportunity in the first half where the goalkeeper sort of shot off his line and stopped the heavy touch that Ronaldo took.
Right,
he would have scored that. I think he would have scored that 3 or 4 years ago.
There was a classic Ronaldo moment where there's a cross and he leaps about 70 metres into the air and you think, here we go. But it's not quite there anymore, and he puts it well wide.
I don't disagree with a lot of what you're saying, but I think we're also almost conveniently forgetting that players need rhythm, players need games,
right,
players need a manager that likes them.
Okay.
And all of these things have been denied Ronaldo this season. So I'm going to say he could still he could get a little
That is a very good counter argument, and I concede
it will be
on that one. Yeah, fair.
We'll come back to this. There'll be round two, I'm sure, because the Ronaldo story will continue. Portugal topping the group, of course, after the 0-0 earlier on Thursday between Uruguay and South Korea. Kaz B says, I went to Uruguay against South Korea. Was it a good game? Sort of not sure. Kaz B, I'm afraid there's bad news. I don't think he went to a good game. Very little happened. The commentators spent most of their time discussing the Korean lineup and the fact that they have five people called Kim in it,
yes.
Which Kim is a popular name in Korea, 21% of the population on that. But still, it was quite remarkable. This is how Italian commentators read the South Korean lineup.
La Corea del Sud con Kim, Jung-won, Na-so, Lin e Hwang.
There you go. I noticed nobody's doing this, by the way, with the Serbian team and the number of Milinkovic's they have, which is similar numbers, similar. Anything else we should know about this game?
There was a sitter, wasn't there, that was missed by South Korea. Oh, I mean, goodness me, that was a shocker.
There were also two Uruguay shots that came off the woodwork, one from Valverde.
Valverde was one of the standouts, wasn't he? I thought he was everywhere, as he so often is. It was a great effort. He produced a wonderful piece of tracking back and a tackle, and which was then accompanied by the now customary World Cup fist pump. Right. That's what you have to do when you produce a tackle, even if it's on the halfway line. We saw a great tackle from Jimenez inside the box as well. So there were little moments to admire, but it wasn't a great game. I think we had one shot.
Which is the lowest number of shots in a World Cup game since 1986, Scotland against Norway.
what we also saw in the game was the continuation of this theme of old, once were great centre-forwards that are now at the top end of the pitch,
right.
Kind of just taking up a
is
spot.
Is it Luis Suarez?
It's Luis Suarez, Gareth Bale, Ronaldo.
Luis Suarez looked very slow in his cameo
really
today. One thing that impressed me was the intensity of South Korea's press and also Uruguay's way to counteract that, which was just 60-yard balls over the top.
All right.
I think the first 25 minutes looked like it would be a tactically intriguing 0-0, and then it ended up being a tactically dull 0-0.
A lot of long balls in the game. Just one observation on Uruguay. Obviously, at the top end of the pitch with Suarez, no pace at all. Uh-huh. I think they need Nunez there. At the back, they've got Godin, who basically gives himself about...
They're kind of the Atletico Madrid of international football, aren't they?
Yeah, but he gives himself about 8 yards. He just stays deeper than everybody else so that he can make up for the lack of speed. So they've got no dynamism at either end, yet in the middle of the pitch, they've got three of the fittest, most athletic midfield players at the tournament.
List them.
Now you're putting me on the spot.
You've got Mr. Valverde, you've got Bentancur, and you've got Vecino.
That's it, yeah. Nice. And I thought that they look good, and they'll be a match for anybody, but it's not a game we're going to remember.
Okay. All right. Friday, we'll talk about that next.
Incredible game. When they play with a false nine, it changes everything.
A false nine, eh? What's that then?
Well, it's it's what he's a nine, but he's not really a nine in the area. I just got to take that.
Urgent football question? Call the Athletic Emergency Football Hotline. 0800 433 433. News, insights, analysis. The Athletic. Know the game. Love the game.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at LiveScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
There's a special offer this week, listener. You can purchase a subscription to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the next 12 months. If you fancy a bit of that, go to theathletic.com/totally for details. So the second round is about to get underway. In Group A, 1 p.m. on Friday, it's another chance for host Qatar to score or have a shot on target as they host Senegal, who also lost their opener 2-0, of course. And meanwhile, round one's winners in that group, Netherlands and Ecuador, will face each other. That's at 4 o'clock UK time. In Group B, 10 a.m., it's Wales-Iran. Iran, who were beaten 6-2 by England back on Monday. Wales, who are winless in 6 matches after the point they picked up later on Monday against the USA. That game is the early one on Friday. In the evening, meanwhile, hello, England, USA. England, of course, are the favourites. But then again, they were, weren't they, in 2010 in Rustenburg when it finished 1-1. And they were in 1993 as well in Foxborough when it finished 2-0 USA. And of course, they were in 1950 in Minas Gerais when USA beat England 1-0 in a match so iconic they made a movie of it.
You know, there's not a single person out there in those stands who knows who we are. Most people don't even think we belong here. But we are here. And we're about to go out there and play the best team in the world.
Well, there's your team talk. There you go, a bit of Game of Their Lives, or Miracle Match, as it was also known in some regions. That film features Gerard Butler. Anyway, we're joined now by a man who knows exactly who the US MNT is, Sam Stayskull. Sam, hello. To paraphrase Paul Revere, the English are coming.
They are indeed. Man, I did not expect a Paul Revere reference right there. That's a good one.
All right. Where are you at the moment? It sounds like the biggest Thanksgiving party around.
Yes, I am in the FIFA main media center at the Qatari National Convention Center in Doha. I actually just came from a Thanksgiving meal, as a matter of fact, that U.S. Soccer hosted in conjunction with Major League Soccer for a group of reporters and other folks. So I'm speaking to you on a very full stomach of turkey and other things.
All right, that sounds very nice. Let's talk a little bit about the game against Wales. A couple of days on, what's your feeling? A fabulous Timothy Weah goal, but then felt like 3 points thrown away?
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I watched it again yesterday morning, Wednesday morning, and I actually felt a little bit better about the performance in some ways. You know, watching it live, there was such a contrast between the first and second half in terms of how Wales were playing that it felt like the second half went a little worse for the U.S. than I think it did on the second watch. But they struggled. They got into good spots, but they struggled doing anything from those good positions. The final ball was really lacking on Monday night, and that is, unfortunately for this team, a bit of a common theme. So we'll see if they can clean that up on Friday against England. They're going to need to if they're going to get a result, because England are going to be causing a lot more problems than Wales for the U.S. defense.
Okay, what are the prospects for USA? I've seen suggestions that this is the kind of game that this U.S. team are built for.
Yeah, in some ways, I believe that's true. You know, they are a team that thrives in transition. We saw Wales really set up in a low block, as they like to do, and invite the U.S. to break them down with the ball, and that's not something that the U.S. is amazing at. Having said that, the U.S. hasn't played a team as talented as England, maybe at any point, under Greg Berhalter. So yeah, the style might fit them a little bit better than the game against Wales did, but England is more talented at literally every single position. I'm not sure there's a single player on the U.S. roster that would have made England's team, maybe one or two, perhaps. So it's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be a very uphill battle for the U.S. And if they can get a point, I think they'll leave really, really happy.
If England have the man-to-man advantage then through the team, what does the U.S. side have in to their advantage?
Well, I think a psychological edge could potentially come into play. I think we saw that a little bit in the 2010 game between these teams. Obviously, these groups are entirely different. And obviously, this England group, I think, has handled pressure maybe better than those past generations of England teams did. But in the American soccer psyche, to the extent one exists, England holds a very special place. And U.S. soccer, men's soccer in particular, is always fighting for respect and always fighting to prove themselves. And there is no better team to prove yourself against and to earn that respect than England. So this is going to be, I mean, the players won't say it, but this is the biggest match of their tournament, certainly in the group stage. It might even be bigger than a round of 16 matchup should they advance to that point. So they're going to come out firing. They're going to come out really, really intense. They're going to come out fired up, maybe a little bit like what we saw from Canada last night in terms of their mentality and confidence and swagger. So if there is an edge for the U.S., I would say it's just the stage. They've handled the big stages really well in the past, this team. And I think they'll come out with a good bit of extra fire against England.
All right. Are there any changes that you expect Greg Berhalter to make? And which changes do you think he should make ahead of this game?
You know, the big debate is about Gio Reyna and his availability. And there was some question about that against Wales. He did not come into the match, which surprised myself and many other people. Reyna, of course, is a very talented attacking player for Borussia Dortmund, very good friends with Jude Bellingham, as a matter of fact, just turned 20. And he has the ability with the final ball and the creativity and the vision and the dribbling skill that really nobody else on the U.S. team has. And so we don't know how healthy he is. Berhalter said he held him out because he was a little bit concerned. He had some tightness. Reyna said after the match that he had been good to go. So there's a little bit of a disconnect there. For that reason, I don't think he will start. I do think he will get into the game, though, particularly if the U.S. are trailing in the second half. In terms of any changes that I would make, you know, I don't think I would make any. I think I would keep the same team. If you wanted to make an argument for starting Brendan Aaronson instead of Weston McKennie, I think you could probably do that. But McKennie is very good on set pieces. The U.S. as a whole struggles a little bit to defend set pieces. England, as we saw on Monday, did well on those against Iran. So I think McKennie will stay in for that reason, as well as a few others as well.
Wow, there you go. Sam Stacekill. What a game this looks like being. Friday, Adrian. It's on ITV. Mm-hmm. USA, England. Will they show the goals this time, I wonder?
Let's hope so.
For those who don't know, the last time this game happened in the World Cup in 2010, ITV HD cut to, there was a delay, there was an advert, and people missed Steven Gerrard's opener.
Yeah, it was a car advert. Yeah.
Shocking, wasn't it? I've tried to forget that game. That was not good.
Oh, it was
not
the whole good. World Cup.
Yeah. Not good from an England perspective. But look, it sounds like USA are going to be pumped up for it, doesn't it?
Well, if they watch that movie beforehand, they will be. Carl, you've seen Game of Their Lives stroke miracle match.
It is hilarious. I mean, it's unintentionally hilarious. I would recommend highly that everyone should check out the trailer on YouTube. And it's
Patrick Stewart's in it as an American sports reporter.
Yes, it's of it's from a very particular time in US filmmaking when they understand that soccer is a big deal, but they don't necessarily understand how to shoot it or why it's a big deal.
That's been a perennial problem for filmmakers all over the world, making realistic soccer on film, football on film. I mean, this is probably not the time or the place. Adrian, you want to say something about England's midfield? I mean, you were mentioning them before.
Yeah, I think, well, America are a mediocre team, aren't they? Let's be honest.
He's gone for it, hasn't he?
They're not the best.
He's gone for it.
I think
clip this one up for Friday night.
I don't really rate this side. I think their strongest department is in central midfield, where they've got a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm, and maybe the ability to sort of make life difficult for our players and get in their faces. But beyond that, I don't see too much of a problem. And the reason why I'm so confident about England in this game is that our central midfield, I know I'm tempting fate, but I just feel our central midfield is arguably the best it's been in many, many tournaments. I think we're as well equipped to dominate the US engine room as anybody, and I think we'll win the game comfortably.
I'm reading that England boss Gareth Southgate is expected to name an unchanged lineup for the second game against USA on Friday, which means that Harry Kane's ankle is sufficiently unswollen to allow him to take part.
Seems good. Seems like that will be really important for how England want to attack. I know you've talked a lot about England's midfield. Wales looked to try and match USA in midfield in a 1-1 draw before realising actually just get to the big lad up top. And, I mean, England don't necessarily have a big lad, but I wouldn't...
Harry Maguire
for set piece? Yeah, that'll do. Yeah, why not?
Saka against Anthony Robinson might be an interesting battle because Robinson loves to fly up that left. He'll be either the most ambitious player. Will he still do that up against Bukayo Saka, who played so well in that opener, I wonder. So, there's a few interesting battlegrounds.
Well, the United States men's team are good and it clicks. They are very well known for their positional discipline and how essentially organised and rigorous they are. I'm here, you're there, boom, 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 boom. But even at their best, they do lack a little bit of edge in that final third. So
They had six shots against Wales and everybody said, weren't they good in the first half? The bottom line is they played Wales, had six shots and scored from their only shot on target. I don't know whether they've got the tools to hurt.
Or maybe they'll bring in Gio Reyna this time for a kind of, young prodigy Borussia Dortmund derby with Jude Bellingham.
Yeah, why not?
One thing I will say is this, Adrian. Mm. I bet in 1950, the night before, there were pundits going, well, this USA team are very mediocre. I'm not concerned at all about them. And I bet in Rustenburg. And I bet in Foxborough as well, Massachusetts.
What have I done?
What have you done? Well, we'll see anyway. We'll be back on Friday night. That brings us to the end of today's show. So many thanks to Natalie Jedra, who joined us earlier, and Sam there a short time ago, and Carl and Adrian, and special guest producer Steve. Tomorrow night, Friday night, for you, Tom and Liam will be in to review the action. Of course, that Wales game as well. And we'll be, you know, having chats with friends from around the globe, hopefully, as well. So hopefully you'll be joining us too, listener. For now, that's it from all of us here. It's goodbye.
The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.